Blog Talk Radio.
It's Saturday night, and this is Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Saturday evening. It is February 18th, 2023, and I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks coming to you at the conclusion of WWE's Elimination Chamber Premium Live event, the final stop on the road to WrestleMania. Good to have you along with us. Our usual time slot is Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern. So if you're listening for the first time, first of all, welcome. And second of all, we'd love to hear from you on any other weekend that we do Wrestling Night in America. So we take live calls, as we're doing tonight, 515-605-9345. And we take emails at wnialivecast@gmail.com. Got a couple emails to get through tonight as well as some phone calls. So we'll get to that in just a moment. But I like to set the stage when we have these shows after special events. We'll have one after Revolution in March for AEW. I like to run down the card, tell you what happened, make sure we're all on the same page, and then we can get into it and get into a larger discussion. So, again, thank you for joining me. You can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks, by the way. I've been tweeting a lot of XFL today because it is the first kickoff for the XFL. Very exciting time for XFL fans and people who cover the league as I do for XFLboard.com. So certainly if you want to interject with your thoughts on the games, don't spoil the night game, though, Orlando and Houston. I'm only up to halftime on that one. So the Elimination Chamber show, it was interfering with my with my XFL watching today, but that I digress. The Elimination Chamber coming to you live from Montreal, Quebec, Canada, here tonight. This show started with the Women's Chamber. Natalia and Liv Morgan were the first two to start things off. Raquel Rodriguez came out third. Then it was Nikki Cross, followed by Carmella and Asuka. Asuka was the last one in eliminations. Nikki Cross was eliminated first by Raquel. Liv Morgan was eliminated second by Natalia and Asuka. Natalia eliminated third by Carmella. Raquel Rodriguez eliminated fourth by Asuka and Carmella. And Carmella was the final person eliminated by Asuka. So Asuka gets the victory here. Not terribly surprising, I guess. She was the obvious winner here coming out of this show. And they went with the obvious choice, which was the good choice. Asuka versus Bianca Belair is probably the best matchup you can go with once you've decided that Rhea Ripley is facing Charlotte Flair on SmackDown. So I applaud WWE for going the obvious yet correct route on this. Asuka's new face paint and slightly altered character, I guess is how I would put it, is something worth delving into over the next few months. So we'll see how deep WWE gets into the Asuka lore with that. I think there is something to be brought out of that WWE has really yet to mine in terms of storylines and angles with the Asuka character. So I'm interested to see how that goes. Surprising that Carmella was second to last, I guess. I would have pegged her to get eliminated a little earlier, but that was not the case here. I thought maybe Raquel was a candidate to be the last one eliminated. But it was a really solid match. It was all action. I thought the men and the women's chamber matches were both very solid, very good matches, very entertaining matches. Was not a lot of downtime. Everybody got a chance to shine. I think everybody came out of this better than they were going in, and it really helped some people like Raquel Rodriguez, who's kind of been on the cusp, a big push over there on SmackDown. Nikki Cross, you know, back to that persona she had early on in her WWE run and in her NXT run. And so she's transitioning back into that character. So this helps her gain some credibility for when she wrestles on TV going forward. So I thought that was important as well in this one. Liv Morgan, surprised she was the second one eliminated. She had some shine in this match, continuing with that character is a character that is so not impervious to pain, but welcomes pain. I guess a masochist in some ways, if you want to say that. But I think it's defining her very well as a character. And I think she's had more success with this character than I think I would have guessed that she would have on the main roster. So kudos to her certainly for that. Match number two was Lashley versus Brock Lesnar. Lashley getting the victory via disqualification, low blow, and Lesnar attacked Lashley and the ref after the match. So this continues. And if it doesn't sound like I'm enthused, I'm really not. I don't know. I think that there was a time where this was a really intriguing matchup. But this match was basically every Brock Lesnar match we've seen in the last 10 years. And so, I know no matter who he wrestles, it will probably be the same. But Gunther is out there. And I know that Gunther's probably going to be at WrestleMania against Sheamus, Drew McIntyre in a triple threat. And hey, all the more power to them. I think that'll probably be a great match. But I think Lesnar and Gunther, based on their interaction in the Royal Rumble, is something you have to go to. Maybe it's SummerSlam. But that feels like a WrestleMania match to me, in part because it really is a first-time matchup with Gunther and Lesnar. And so I think that's important. It feels like a big matchup. It passes that test. You know, does it feel like a WrestleMania match? Certainly Gunther versus Brock Lesnar does in my mind. You're running now back Lesnar and Lashley again. It'll be the third time, I believe, if not the fourth, that they've matched up. But, you know, certainly that finish here tonight hinted at that. I mean, more than hinted at it, I guess I should say. Kind of predicted that rematch at WrestleMania. Nothing was settled here in this match because it was a disqualification finish. So, you know, this is kind of every Lesnar match with a worse finish is how I termed it on Twitter. There's a question I want to get to in our emails. And it says, "Hello, Greg. Was originally going to wait for the pay-per-view to end to get my email in, but man, what's up with WWE not treating Lashley as an equal to Brock? That finish was lame. Brock is a heel, but doing a lot of mid-2000s Triple H antics, knowing fans won't boo him. I have no desire to see these two face each other anymore and hope Lashley gets some direction moving forward. Not thrilled it might be Wyatt." Well, if you're not thrilled it might be Wyatt, I've got some good news. It's probably Lesnar again. So I'm not sure if that's a more satisfying alternative or what, but that does seem to be the direction they are going in. I don't know if they're not treating Lashley as equal to Brock. I think if that was the case, you would not have seen a disqualification finish here, and you would not see WWE with the intent of going with Lashley versus Lesnar at WrestleMania, which seems to be the direction they're going in. I don't think it's Bray Wyatt. I think that would be Lashley versus Bray. You know, I wouldn't rule that out at some point. Lashley being on Raw, Bray Wyatt being on SmackDown, I think makes it a little tougher, even as we've seen wrestlers go back and forth between brands a lot more frequently the last several months. So, it's not something you can rule out, but I just don't see that being the case. I think it's going to be Lashley-Lesnar continuing. And so because of that, I guess it's not, in my mind, seeing them not being treated as equals. Lesnar, the emailer mentioned Lesnar being a heel and certainly the DQ, the low blow. I didn't think it was – maybe I'm wrong, but it was not as obvious of a low blow as it could have been in other circumstances. So he was getting a babyface reaction on this night, and he was playing to the crowd as a babyface. So, I'm not sure with Lashley sort of dipping his toe back into the Hurt business if that would make him more of a heel. I think it's just two guys who just love to create chaos and love to beat each other up, and hopefully that will get cleared up a little more as we get closer to WrestleMania. Match number three was Edge and Beth Phoenix defeating Finn Balor and Rhea Ripley in a mixed tag match, Edge pinning Balor to get the victory. you know, I think that with Rhea Ripley at WrestleMania in a match with Charlotte Flair, you weren't going to let her take the pin, especially against what I would generously call a part-timer in Beth Phoenix. So you knew that Edge and Finn Balor had to play a part in the finish, even as Edge and Finn are likely to square off at WrestleMania in some sort of stipulation match. So I thought it was smart, though, in the booking of this match and in the laying out of this match, that Rhea and Beth were the focus. I thought that was a smart move because I think they're the more interesting pair in this match, more so than Edge and Finn Balor. So I thought it was smart sort of building the match around them as they did. So I liked that aspect of it. Largely liked the match in part because of that. So that's kind of my take on this one. Dominic Mysterio getting involved at times in the crowd. You know, Dominic is a guy people love to hate at this point, and the crowd in Montreal loved to hate him on this evening. So just good stuff there. You know, again, Edge versus Finn Balor, you're looking at. They could have done a finish similar to Lashley-Lesnar because, you know, Lashley-Lesnar rematching at WrestleMania, Edge, Finn Balor having a match at WrestleMania. Could have done a finish that was a little less decisive in this one. But then I think coming on the heels of Lashley versus Lesnar and the finish in that one, I think that probably would not have been a smart move. Match number four was the men's chamber. Johnny Gargano and Seth Rollins were the first two in the ring. Theory was third, Damian Priest fourth, Bronson Reed fifth, and Montez Ford sixth. So same principle as I thought in the women's chamber. Just by virtue of being in this match, it really elevated a lot of these guys who, quite frankly, need elevating. WWE's main event scene is not getting any younger, and they need some new blood in there. And so they could have done a chamber with a bunch of main event level guys and, you know, sought to do a number one contender for, I don't know, Roman Reigns' other title or something like that, and have one against Cody, one against Roman on each night of WrestleMania. But instead, they put the U.S. title in here. And, you know, you had guys like Bronson Reed, who got to show off his power in a multi-man match by just lifting multiple men at a time. You had Montez Ford, who had his working boots on. I mean, there was no doubt that Montez Ford saw this as an opportunity to show off his singles bona fides. And I'm not sure when WWE is looking to push him as a singles wrestler. I think that's an if. That's a when, not an if. But I think when they do, we're going to look back at this match and point to it and say, this was really the start of Montez Ford's singles push and him really giving notice that he was ready and primed for a singles push. I think he was that good in this match. And the crowd reacted to him like a star. The crowd was into everything all night, so they did react to everybody like a star. But Montez, I think, was the beneficiary of that reaction in this match. Bronson Reed was the first out, eliminated by Montez Ford. There was no eliminations until all six men were in the ring. Johnny Gargano was out second via Damian Priest. Priest was out third by Montez Ford. Ford was out by Theory, Rollins by Theory, and then that made Theory the winner. Logan Paul interfered, attacking Seth Rollins. That was when the cage door was open, when medics were coming in to check on Montez Ford after his elimination. So the Theory, pun intended, after the Royal Rumble was, based on what happened in the Rumble match, it would be Seth Rollins versus Logan Paul at WrestleMania, and what we saw in the chamber tonight certainly cemented that. So Logan Paul versus Seth Rollins, you can kind of write that in stone, I think. And Austin Theory, the United States champion. So I think if someone else had won the title in this match, I think you could have said, oh, that person versus Austin Theory at WrestleMania for the U.S. title. Now that Theory has won it, and all of these wrestlers have already gotten an opportunity at the U.S. title, you start looking at, okay, who do you go to now? Obviously, the U.S. title, by virtue of being defended in a chamber and Austin Theory walking out as champion, it's on a higher plane than we're used to seeing the United States title being booked. So it's going to be in a prominent position on WrestleMania. It's not going to be one of those WrestleMania matches where the United States champion is defended in a pre-show or it's not on the show at all. It's going to be on the show, and it's probably going to be booked pretty strongly. So then who is that opponent for Austin Theory? Can't completely rule out that it would be somebody in this match, even a Montez Ford. But again, you could also make the argument that all of these wrestlers got a fair opportunity at winning in the chamber match, and it would be time for someone else to have a chance. On to the main event. Roman Reigns defeating Sami Zayn to retain the undisputed WWE Universal Championship. Zayn's wife was shown numerous times at ringside. His family was shown at ringside. The crowd reaction was as you would expect in Zayn's hometown. Took a long time for either man to lay hands on each other after the bell rang. So it was a good match, and they played the crowd well. I thought that the heat was strong enough here with the story being in Sammy's hometown that you didn't need to do all the gaga at the end that they did. That included two ref bumps, that included Jimmy Uso being involved, that included, after the match, Jey Uso being involved. But I thought you could have done a pretty straight-up match. You had Sami Zayn get the visual pinfall on Roman Reigns. I'm not even sure that was necessary. I think Kevin Owens had just done that at the Royal Rumble. So, you know, maybe that's tying in a story there together. But for someone who is portrayed as dominant as Roman Reigns has been portrayed, and in a lot of ways rightly so, I'm not sure you want to give away visual pinfalls on the guy 2 months in a row. That's just my take, especially against, you know, guys the level of Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, which, you know, they're not the strongest level opponents that Reigns has faced in his 902 days as champion. Even as Zayn had the momentum behind him with the storyline and everything like that. So that was kind of an odd decision. And I know that there is a temptation creatively to put all of this stuff in the match because the Roman Reigns storyline is so heavily praised, and there are so many tentacles to it. Jey Uso, Jimmy Uso, Heyman's role, Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. So there are all these tentacles that you want to try to incorporate into the match to further each tentacle in the story, but at some point it becomes too much. And maybe you don't have to advance this one. Maybe you can just deal with these two during the match. So I guess if I had a complaint about it, that would be it. Reigns does get the victory. He was going to use a chair on Sami Zayn after the match. Jey Uso stepped in, got involved, and Zayn, it may not have even been after the match now that I'm remembering it, Zayn ended up knocking accidentally Jey out of the ring. Reigns gets the victory. Reigns takes a chair to Sami Zayn. Kevin Owens comes out to a huge pop, helps his friend. There was no embrace, though. It was still a little chilly between Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. And I always had the feeling, as this match was being built, that it would end with Kevin Owens. It would end with Sami Zayn losing. The bloodline in some form, whether that was Jimmy and Roman, whether that was just Roman, whether it was Jimmy, Roman, and Solo, beating down Sami Zayn post-match. And that Kevin Owens would make the save. Owens put Roman Reigns through a table at ringside. It was interesting, the physical interaction between Owens and Reigns, because the assumption being this leads to Owens and Zayn versus the Usos for the tag titles at WrestleMania. So you could have really gotten Reigns out of there somehow. He didn't have to get beat down necessarily by Owens, unless he wanted Owens to get his heat back from the beating at the Royal Rumble. But I always felt that Owens and Zayn reuniting at the end was the way to go. I got most of the story right. There's obviously still work to be done between Owens and Zayn and patching things up. And maybe that was the right way. Maybe the heat between them was so intense that it's going to take more than just a single moment to bring them back together, that there's going to be, you know, more time is needed, maybe more moments, maybe more discussion, whatever the case may be, to bring these two back together for WrestleMania. So I thought it was overall a really good show. You know, the only question I would have, the only hesitancy I would have is how the main event sort of played out, and that gets into another one of our emails that I'll get to here in a few minutes. You know, we do have another email before we get to – we got Brian from Phoenix, Arizona on hold. No one else on hold, by the way. I'm surprised after such an anticipated show, an anticipated main event, we've got nobody calling in besides Brian. So if you want to get on the line, 515-605-9345, we'll get to you very quickly. Press 1 on your keypad to show up in the line to get put on the air. We do have a couple emails, but our calls are free and clear if you want to join us. So this is an email from Brian. He says, "Hi, Greg. Of the following three wrestlers, which one should be the one to end Roman's reign? Sami Zayn, Cody Rhodes, or Gunther?" You don't necessarily have to read this part. I guess I won't read this part. Brian said his answer would be Gunther, but not for at least another year. Keep them both undefeated and on a collision course until they finally meet. So that's interesting. This was sent before the Elimination Chamber. So even then, I would have said Cody Rhodes. And if they had had Sami Zayn win tonight, I would have been totally fine with that. I was not against Sami winning. If they had had Reigns win, which they did, to go on to face Cody Rhodes at WrestleMania with this 900-plus day streak intact, I'm fine with that too. To me, there was no wrong answer here. I thought both options were good ones. I think I could have made the argument for both options. Probably could have made the argument against both options too. So neither was the perfect scenario, which is why I think they were both okay. So to answer Brian's question more specifically, of those three, if I had to choose, I think Cody Rhodes. I think Gunther is a really, really good heel. Maybe he's a really good babyface, I don't know, but I want to see him go on a longer run as a heel and perhaps challenge Cody Rhodes if Cody wins at WrestleMania because of their interaction in the Royal Rumble. You now set up Gunther, whenever he loses the Intercontinental Championship, perhaps at WrestleMania, to be one of the top challengers for Cody Rhodes given their interaction there. So Cody, I think, given his story of, you know, his father playing such a big role in his life and career, very similarly to Roman Reigns, he's the head of the table for his family, yada yada yada, the stories match up pretty well there. And you know, I don't want to get into the whole argument of Sami Zayn doesn't look like a champion, he's not going to, you know, the whole you know, he's not going to represent WWE in media and on the Today Show or whatever the case may be. I don't necessarily buy that. But Cody Rhodes definitely seems like a guy you can build around more so than Sami Zayn, like a long-term main eventer more so than Sami Zayn. And that's not to say I don't like Sami. That's not to say I don't think he plays an important role in WWE. But I think to unseat Roman Reigns, my choice of those three would be Cody Rhodes. Again, I could be wrong, and if they had gone with Sami, I would have been fine with it because I think the story that they found themselves involved in with Sami is one that would be worth calling an audible a little bit from, I think, what they had planned. I don't think they had anticipated Sami getting over to this level. All right, let's go to the phones. Brian from Phoenix, Arizona, long time, 31-year PW Torch subscriber. I'll get in the plug so Brian doesn't have to. PWTorch.com/GoVIP is where you can go to sign up for your VIP membership. Later tonight, you can catch the Elimination Chamber Roundtable hosted by Torch editor Wade Keller. So, Brian, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight. How are you?
Hey, Greg, how are you? Hopefully you have a great night as well. Thank you, as always, for having me on.
Absolutely, Brian. Always good to talk to you. What did you think of the chamber tonight?
Well, really quick, I appreciate that you doing my plugs for me, and but I will give you one correction. I am a 32-year now, 32-year
okay.
Toys VIP subscriber.
Let me make a note of that so I can – 32-year. Wow, Brian, amazing. Thank you for your patronage of the Torch during that time. Really appreciate it.
My joke is that my dad bought it for me when I was in the crib, so that's how I became – that. I'm only 33 years old, you know, so that's how I'm
Get them started young is what I say.
You know, yeah, it's funny when people say I've been a wrestling fan my entire life. I was like, okay, yeah, I got it. You know, yeah, you're, you know, as an infant, you know, parents are sitting there. I mean, it happens though, right? So, but in all seriousness, Greg, again, thanks a lot for having me on. Hopefully everybody has a great night, and hi to all of the Torch listeners out there. You said a couple things I'm going to talk about really briefly, and I'm going to get to my point about Austin Theory. First thing you talked about, or you talked about a lot of things, but the visual pin. And I would agree with you. I'm not a fan of that. But editor-publisher Wade Keller mentioned this a couple weeks ago. And I actually remember watching an AWA interview with Larry Nelson and Nick Bockwinkel, the legendary AWA champion. And Larry was saying about, hey, Nick, you know, I know that, you know, if you're asleep and I come up to you and start whispering one, two, and you just automatically just wake up and kick out. And so, you know, they don't talk about this, or the commentators, I should say, don't mention this very much. But like with tonight, where Sami Zayn got the visual pin on Roman Reigns, there was like, you know, the fans were counting, you know, the 17,000 people were counting 1, 2, 3, but there was no slap on the mat for 1, 2, 3. So I can, you know, we all talk about, you know, being immersed in a match and what takes you away from a match, or takes you away from wrestling, I should say. I could see where that thought pattern comes up, where Roman didn't hear like a, so he didn't kick out, you know. So really quick, what's your thoughts about that when you put that part into it?
I think that's fair. I didn't think that was clear and obvious, though, to the viewers. I think, you know, Corey Graves, as more of the heel commentator, I think should have been the one to point that out, because I think that's a fair point. But I don't know that it's a point that a lot of viewers would necessarily think of in that moment. But I think that's a fair point.
And I agree with you. It would be up for at least for the television viewer, for the commentators to talk about that. And yeah, maybe in the audience, or I'll say it, WWE Universe, that they probably wouldn't get that part, but I always just think about that interview, and again, that was a mid 80s interview that Larry Nelson did with Nick Bockwinkel. Next thing you mentioned about another Brian. Hey, Brian, sent an email about who should actually dethrone Roman Reigns. Is it Sami Zayn, Cody Rhodes, or Gunther? I like the Gunther route, but you know, we'll have to see how this Cody part works. I could see it because of the whole Cody Rhodes, Dusty Rhodes imagery that Cody brought up. I could see that, but I still think that that Roman's is on such an epic run right now. I think they're going to keep it going, but you know, I've stopped trying to, you know, guess about how wrestling is going to happen, and you know, and to me it's always about the ride.
So
about
you think
it.
Reigns wins at WrestleMania?
Count me as Reigns is going to win WrestleMania. Yes, Greg. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I guess I hadn't put a lot of thought into that. I guess I just assumed Rhodes would win as sort of the culmination of his return to WWE and this transformation into a main event wrestler in WWE who carries himself as a main event wrestler, who's leaving Stardust and all that other stuff behind. But so, yeah, you've given me something to think about, because I hadn't given a lot of consideration to Reigns winning at WrestleMania. It does feel like if Reigns is going to lose, it's got to be on a big stage. It's not going to be at WrestleMania Backlash. You know, it just doesn't feel like – so, I mean, you look after that, what's the next show? SummerSlam in late July, early August. So then you start wondering, you know, as great as the Bloodline storyline has been – you know, you're always wondering, is he going to have the momentum to be able to carry it through there, you know? Or
right.
or do you have him lose it at WrestleMania, if for nothing else than to, and I've made this argument for the last year and a half here, but do you have him lose it at WrestleMania just to give a different angle to the Bloodline storyline? You know, we've only seen Roman Reigns in the Bloodline storyline as champion. So
yep.
what happens if he's not champion? You know, how does that twist things a little bit? How does that change the dynamic within the Bloodline and that storyline? And I think that would be a way to freshen it up and actually give it more legs and add more time to that story.
Oh, you know, and that's – I didn't think about it in that route as well. And, you know, I know when once Roman leaves, it's going to be a maybe even a paradigm shift as far as how the Bloodline goes. And, you know, to me, always the silent – person who I'm always have my eye on a little bit, like everybody, it's Solo Sikoa, and how he, you know, he's been a pretty good soldier this entire time. And I did like what Sami Zayn, you know, said about how, you know, once Roman started closing ranks a little bit more, now you notice about how, except for tonight, Solo Sikoa has been next to Roman almost the entire time. So I, you know, you gave me something to think about what's going to happen when, you know, if it's WrestleMania, what happens the Raw after WrestleMania or the SmackDown after WrestleMania if Roman does lose? And then again, how does he lose?
Yeah.
Is it, you know, does somebody super kick him by mistake or a chair shot, or, you know, if it's a member of the if it's Jey Uso who does it? So
hey,
so thanks a lot for giving me
something
to think
about. Moving parts. You've got
exactly.
all these moving parts within the Bloodline, the Sikoas, the Jey Usos, the Jimmy Usos. You know, what role do they play in the eventual loss of Roman Reigns? Maybe they don't play any. Maybe they throw us a total curveball and Cody Rhodes wins clean and nobody interferes, you know? That would be a shocking swerve in and of itself for the lack of a shocking swerve. So, yeah,
yep.
I think that's the other question you got to answer, and that would be your cliffhanger for Raw and SmackDown the next night. Is, okay, what kind of war path is Roman Reigns going to be on now that he's no longer champion?
Yep, and I would agree. You know, let's talk about, and I'll talk about this part briefly again. I'll let you go so some other callers can get on and you can take care of some emails. So Austin Theory, and I have the press conference playing on the background while I was listening to you. You have my full attention and not the press conference. But Austin Theory, he did open it up, and he, you know, interacted with the press more playing out his personality. So he just played it in character. But somebody did ask the question about is John Cena, will be that be his next opponent or be his WrestleMania opponent? And then, Greg, I have the Raw men's roster list up here, and I'm looking at it as far as baby faces, and, you know, besides, like you said, when you're talking about the Elimination Chamber match, you know, could Johnny Gargano challenge him again? Could it be Montez Ford challenging him again? If I'm going to just stick on the baby face side to bring those names up,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's possible, yeah, but then if I look at the roster here, it's kind of thin. I pulled Mustafa Ali, you know, it's a possibility as a, you know, as a challenger at WrestleMania. Other than that, it's not a whole lot that's going on here. So your thoughts about who could be Theory's opponent at WrestleMania, and I guess we have to put Cena out there. That would be, you know, logical. That would be logical. So what is your thoughts about that?
Yeah, and I think, you know, you kind of laid out the reason for that. You know, John Cena Theory is a match that's been bandied about for months now, if not longer. And
mm-hmm.
I think the lack of anyone else who's really in a position on Raw to challenge Theory makes the Cena guess more likely, because I think you would have seen, hopefully, under Triple H, we didn't see this a lot under Vince McMahon, hopefully you would have seen them building someone up, getting
mm-hmm.
them ready for Theory, so that we wouldn't be in this situation where we're staring at the Raw roster and going like, I don't know, maybe Ali, you know. And he's a guy who's been losing a lot on TV, and if Vince McMahon were booking, it would be, he's been losing a lot, but hey, we're going to throw him in this title match anyway, and whatever, people will believe that he's a legitimate challenger because we tell them he is. Again, hopefully that's not the case under Triple H. Hopefully there's a lot more foresight that goes into it, and, you know, they had this planned out long ago, so they would, be building that wrestler up so that we could say, looking at the Raw roster, you know, so-and-so has been building a lot of momentum. They've been getting some wins on TV. I think it might be this person. It seems like yep. they're ready. They're being positioned for a shot. So because we can't find that person and because we assume Triple H is booking that way, I think John Cena would be a good assumption. And I think, you know, not having Dwayne Johnson, not having The Rock go against Roman Reigns, I think made it a little more important that WWE get somebody like Cena. They'd like to get a few part-timers and big names from the past at WrestleMania. And I think it would be a hard pill to swallow in some ways for WWE if they didn't get Dwayne Johnson and they didn't get John Cena. I think if, they would probably love to have both. But I think they would at least really like to have one of them. And so that may make them decide to push a little harder for John Cena.
I would agree as well, Greg. Thank you. That's all I have. And, you know, before I go, I will say that we have, I believe it's at 6 weeks, so let's say 5 weeks. You know, can Mustafa Ali win a match this Monday on Raw? This Monday on Raw, maybe Theory comes out. Theory is sitting on ringside, and some he runs into the ring, and then Ali pins him, or like you know the ref just counts a phantom pin.
Yeah.
And you know they could build him up. You know, it's shotgun. Mm-hmm. They could build him up within a couple weeks to be a strong challenger for. You know, I would like to have seen it, like you said, Greg. You know, back in November, December. You know, Ali just getting these wins, and not too high profile, but just talking about getting these wins.
Yeah.
So, Greg, again, thanks a lot for your time. I really appreciate it. I appreciate your hard work that you do for the Torch. And I'll just say go VIP, and everybody, hopefully everybody has a great night. And thanks always again for having me on. I appreciate it, Greg.
Absolutely. Always appreciate talking to you and getting your thoughts on these PLEs, Brian. Really, really appreciate that. Going back to the emails, wnialivecast@gmail.com, by the way, is where you can send any of your emails anytime because as we're collecting more listeners and more callers as time goes on here, just a reminder that we're on the air every Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern, unless there is a major pay-per-view or PLE like there is tonight with Elimination Chamber. We go on the air right after that show goes off the air. So my name is Greg Parks. I'm Torch columnist. Longtime Torch columnist. You can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. Anyway, the email says, hey, Greg, ended up having time to get an email again after the main event. Do you, instead of doing Sami Owens versus the Usos for the tag titles, they do a 2 out of 3 falls for both world titles with Cody involved, similar to how Kurt Angle defended the IC and European titles, or maybe a fatal four-way. Is that too convoluted? Thanks for taking my emails. Yes, I do think that's too convoluted for the main event of WrestleMania for a match involving Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes. Fatal four-way, I think, is out. I don't think you do that. I think the obvious choice is the right one here, and that is Sammy and Kevin against the Usos for the tag titles, because the Usos now, I mean, they've held the tag titles for a long time too. And so it's going to mean something if Sammy and Kevin could get the titles off them. And, you know, I talked earlier about the Bloodline and Roman Reigns and taking a different angle with Roman Reigns potentially losing the title at WrestleMania. How does he react? We've not seen him in this storyline without the titles. Similarly, the Usos, you know, how does Roman react if he retains and the Usos lose, or if all of them lose their titles? You know, what is the fallout from that within that storyline? So I think that could add a nice twist to the story. The other thing here, too, is Jey Uso. What is his role? What are his feelings? You know, he was getting pie-faced in a similar fashion tonight by Reigns that Sami Zayn was getting pie-faced by him at the Royal Rumble. So he didn't react the same way. Didn't really have time, I don't think, to hit Reigns with a chair. He did think about it for a while, but, you know, what does Reigns think of Jey after tonight? What does Jey think of Reigns? How do Jey and Jimmy get along when they seem to be on opposite ends of the spectrum as it pertains to Sammy and potentially Roman? So that's going to be really something interesting to watch as well. We'll go back to the phones. It's the 580 area code. 580, you're on Wrestling Night in America. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Chris from Oklahoma.
Chris from Oklahoma, good to talk to you tonight, Chris. Thanks for calling in. What'd you think of the Elimination Chamber?
I absolutely loved it. I was surprised because I wasn't expecting much. I was expecting a lot from the main event, but I wasn't expecting much for the Elimination Chambers, and I was actually pleasantly surprised at the Elimination Chambers, how good they were this year, even though there's a, I mean, there was, but there was no real storyline reason for them to be there, but, I mean, it made it feel important, and that was good. I absolutely loved it. But I have a theory about Jey Uso. And my theory is, what if they lose at WrestleMania and Jey somehow turns on Jimmy and after they lose? Would that be a possibility? Would there be some more interesting thing, Uso versus Uso, you know, because of all this?
Yeah, I think that's a possibility. It's going to be really interesting to see the way that they sort of keep the Usos on the same page over the next 6 weeks, if that is the intended direction for them to eventually split. I think, you know, the interesting thing too is you're doing that, you're setting up Jey Uso versus Jimmy Uso, which, you know, honestly, brother versus brother matches, you know, I think about the Hardys, they've never really clicked as far as stories, but I think this could be the exception.
Mm-hmm.
So you not only set that up, but you also set up Jey Uso versus Roman Reigns at some point for the ultimate head of the table. And I think, you know, especially if Reigns retains at WrestleMania, Jey Uso versus Roman Reigns becomes a huge match at some point. So I think that would be the next big step in the big evolution of the Bloodline storyline, is having Jey go off on his own. And I would be really interested to see, because I think he would be a huge babyface for that. And I think the fans would be behind him in a major way, just by virtue of how they reacted at the Rumble, how they reacted at the Elimination Chamber. The fans are totally invested in this Bloodline storyline and everything that's going on in it. So all of a sudden Jey breaks off, he becomes a top babyface like that. And so I would be really interested to see the fallout from that and how much they can get out of Jey Uso as a single star.
Yeah, I'm just thinking the same thing because, I mean, they've been invested. I mean, Jey has been there since day one. And that was to me, amazes me in some ways. The other thing is, after watching the main event, and watching Sammy in the main event, I know for sure we wouldn't have got Sammy versus Reigns if Vince wasn't still in charge. But if, based on his performance tonight, would you say that it would warrant him getting a title run in the future?
I would not rule it out. The problem is he's probably never going to be hotter than he is now. You know what I'm saying? So you're sort of rewarding him for how over he was. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they come up with a way to keep his momentum going and keep him as over as he is. But I just kind of get the feeling like this, if you were going to do it, this was the moment. And so I wouldn't rule out a title run at some point. Maybe they go back to Zayn versus Reigns at some point in the next calendar year. Mm-hmm. Maybe they have Zayn challenge Cody Rhodes. You know, they had a little bit of an interaction a couple weeks ago that, you know, Rhodes is really talking Zayn up and saying, you know, I'm preparing to face you at WrestleMania, you know, trying to really build Zayn up. Perhaps they can pull a few threads from that promo duel and do a Rhodes versus Zayn, two baby faces, but two baby faces who are in very different parts of their career with very different mindsets. So, yeah, I think this proved that Zayn is over enough to warrant a title run. I don't think there was ever any question about his in-ring ability being at the level of warranting a title run. But again, I just question his overness going forward, and you've hit the peak, and can you keep it at least a few notches below this to where he's still really hot? That's going to be my question, especially putting him in a tag situation. You know, maybe that's going to help. Maybe playing off Kevin Owens and their relationship is going to help keep him hot. But, you know, tag team wrestling has been known to be a cooler as well and kind of cool people's momentum a little bit in terms of singles run. So, yeah, that's going to be interesting to see how WWE capitalizes on that.
Okay, that's all I have for you tonight. Thank you so much. I'll keep listening.
Awesome.
And have a great night.
Great. Thanks, Chris. Really, really good hearing from you tonight. Appreciate it. Got another email we'll get to. This is Taylor from Boston. Taylor says, hey, I'm sorry that finish was exactly what people have predicted for months. They had an opportunity to make a truly special moment, and they completely whiffed. Two ref bumps? Come on. It was also great of KO to wait for his friend to completely be screwed out of the title before he showed up. Biggest organic star in the company since Becky Lynch, and they completely blew it. Why? So we can force Rhodes? It's crazy. Yeah, I don't feel as strongly about it as Taylor does, although I'm sure if I went and looked hard enough on social media, I would see similar reactions to that. I hope that people brace themselves enough, though, for the reality that Zayn was not going to win. It was by no means a slam dunk that Zayn was going to win tonight, and all of a sudden, you know, WWE pulled the rug out from under us by having Reigns go over. I don't think anyone could look at themselves honestly and say that they thought there wasn't a sizable possibility that Roman Reigns was going to win. So it shouldn't have resulted in so much of a disappointment unless you were just really hoping to be wrong and really hoping that WWE did the quote-unquote right thing and had Zayn go over. I agreed about the ref bumps. The thing about Kevin Owens, the one thing that really bothered me about the ref bump too, and I tweeted this out, was the fact that Ryan Tran, the second ref, waited until right after Jimmy Uso had interfered blatantly to come down and start counting the pin. Like, I don't know. Like, there should have been a buffer there or an explanation from the announcers of why Ryan Tran was coming out to count a pin that was the result of interference, blatant interference. So I didn't like that. I do think that Taylor brings up a point about Kevin Owens waiting until the last minute, waiting until after, you know, all of this had happened, the refs were bumped, he could have come out then and saved Sammy. I think the ending and the coolness that I mentioned that was still there between Kevin and Sammy showed that Kevin was not, I think he was still conflicted, and I'm not sure that he was on Team Sammy enough to help Sammy win when the match was still at stake. Perhaps Kevin thought that Sammy needed a little humbling and maybe needed to lose, but that, like Sammy, when Kevin Owens was getting beaten down after the match, that Kevin felt that was too much, and that's when he needed to intervene. So I can more easily come up with a reason for Kevin Owens to come out and wait till after the match to save his former best friend than I can for the ref bump thing. That's more forgivable than the ref bump thing, to me anyway. But your mileage may vary. We'll go to DJ from Miami. He's the last caller on hold right now. So if you want to get on before we head off for the night, 515-605-9345. DJ, good to talk to you here tonight after the Elimination Chamber. What'd you think?
It was okay. It wasn't nothing crazy, like, you know, like how I thought it was going to be turned a little differently, like you were just saying a minute ago. So it was all right. I'm just confused, like, with this Roman thing. Like, you know, they back himself on a wall, and then, you know, it's just crazy. So we'll see at the end of the day what happens at WrestleMania. But I want to talk about Bobby Lashley. Like, I feel like going into this, do you think he should have had the Hurt Business, or do you think going into this, at the end of the day, the Hurt Business will reform at WrestleMania? So going out of WrestleMania,
yeah,
I think it's going to be him and Cody at the end of the day later on in the future, because he's becoming a good heel again, and we all said he's the better as a heel than a babyface.
I do think, given the way that WWE booked this with the DQ finish to get to WrestleMania and a rematch with Lashley and Lesnar, I understand the waiting until maybe the road to WrestleMania to get the Hurt Business back together, and maybe they're kind of hovering over the proceedings for WrestleMania, Lashley versus Lesnar there. So I think that makes more sense than getting them together before tonight. Again, because, you know, the story here was the non-finish, and then you still have to build to WrestleMania with these two. So use the Hurt Business as a new piece of the puzzle in that road to WrestleMania, in that build to the rematch.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, because I think that MVP will be, I guess, better going into WrestleMania with him compared to, like, yeah, I see what you're saying. But at the end of the day, where do you really see them, like, down the line? Do you think that he'll be first Cody, him and Cody, probably because he'll be the top heel out coming out of WrestleMania, I think, on Raw side?
Yeah, I mean, certainly if he gets back together with the Hurt Business, that would signal a heel. I think it's kind of Lashley and Lesnar are kind of mushy right now in terms of what their alliance is, what their allegiance is, what side of the ledger they're on. But again, Lashley teaming back up with the Hurt Business puts him back on the heel side. So if that is the case, and if it's, you know, heel Lashley with the Hurt Business against babyface Lesnar, yeah, I could absolutely see Cody Rhodes versus Lashley at some point if Cody Rhodes wins at WrestleMania. You know, every match is going to seem fresh, though, with Cody, you know, except for Seth Rollins, because he comes back, he faces Rollins on a couple shows, he's out for several months, comes back, now he's paired up with Reigns. So there are a lot of potential unique and new challengers for Cody Rhodes if he does win at WrestleMania. Lashley would be one of them. I don't know if he's head and shoulders above any of the others that you could name, but he would certainly be on the list.
But who? But there's no other real heel at Raw right now, right? Would be Lashley. And I'm confused. Is Gunther Raw or SmackDown?
Oh, Gunther's SmackDown. But
okay,
Cody,
so it would
Rhodes
be Bobby Lashley,
be
I think.
The,
like,
Cody Rhodes is going to be the WWE Universal Champion. He's the only major champion. So he's going to be eligible to take on all comers from Raw or SmackDown. I mean, it's not a Raw championship that he has. It's a championship that he has to defend against wrestlers on both brands, presumably.
Okay. I thought they were going to do the – okay. Yeah, okay. So we'll find out really at the end of the day if they ever do the brand split anyway, you know, like, you know, the thing. Mm-hmm. So – after WrestleMania, so I don't know. So, all right.
Right.
My second thing is this. Talking about EAW a little, I saw online that maybe, I don't know, Harpo really wants to go to WWE, though. But the thing is that he has such a bad reputation a little, and this video game thing, that do you think that in 2025, I feel like all EAW will be WWE? It's kind of crazy how so many people want to pull over to WWE now when they can do whatever that they want on the other station. It's kind of crazy how they want to go over here. I understand a little more money, but you're going to have to fall in line. You can't do what you're doing over there.
Who did you say wants to go to WWE?
What's his name? Kenny Omega.
Oh. I didn't catch that. So for guys who, you know, like the Young Bucks, like Omega, for guys, and let me just say, I don't know the veracity of that report that you're citing, so I'm just taking it with a grain of salt, first of all, but you
randomly
know, it's
online,
fun to speculate.
Like...
Well,
I had to bring it up.
I don't know how much stock to put in it if it's not reported by someone with a little more I don't know, journalistic reputation. But let's just say, for example, that Kenny Omega does want to try WWE. I think for guys like Omega and the Young Bucks, you know, WWE is just something you got to try. You know, they are, as much as AEW has been successful in a lot of ways in its brief time in existence, you know, WWE is sort of that place where you kind of feel like you have to try at least once in your career, right? If you're a major star, you got to try it. And I think that's the feeling that some people have. So, you're not going to be able to do a lot of the stuff you do on AEW. You're going to have a lot more restrictions on what you can do inside the ring and outside the ring. But again, it's something that I think is attractive to people, especially with Triple H in charge, you know, and the morale backstage and improving since Triple H took over. I think there is a sense that, you know, the momentum in terms of, at one time it was so many WWE guys looking to leave and go to AEW. But I think that momentum has possibly shifted the other direction where, you know, people in AEW, they've got a large roster for the amount of TV time they have. So there are a lot of wrestlers week to week that are not appearing on TV, and those are the wrestlers that might be thinking about their WWE prospects when their contracts come up.
Now, let me ask you this, out of, like, craziness. Now, let's say he wants to go over there. Let's say MJF wants to go. All the old guys are going to go over there. But the problem is this. Tony's not building up these younger kids to come up and fill those shoes. So if it's kind of crazy how, like, everybody wants to go over there. But
no, I don't know that I agree with that. I think you've got guys like Daniel Garcia. You've got guys like Ricky Starks. You've got guys like Jack Perry.
I'm talking about, like, guys who they really buried. You know, Jungle Boy, you know. Not guys who are kind of established now, you know what I mean?
Well, they're established, but these are guys who can take over as main eventers if these other guys that you're talking about leave, and they would feel fresh.
Right, yeah. I feel like, but they put those guys in the middle compared to these guys had stories and they tried to build them up, then they buried it. That sucks. I hate that, you know? Like, these new guys coming in and, you know, taking over these guys. Yeah, I hate that, you know? So, you know, I just hope they'll do something when a lot of people transfer to WWE, you know what I mean? Because they need to build them up.
Yeah, and I'm not really sure how many guys. I mean, we all hear the talk and stuff like that, but I'm not sure how many end up going to WWE.
I understand. Yeah, I had to ask because I thought that was kind of funny when I saw it online. Because I was, you know, I always have to throw it off the rails. My last thing is SmackDown. Like, let's say Roman does lose. Where do you think SmackDown's really going to end up going? Like, it's so bumbled up. Like, you know, like, especially if they do the draft, it's like, you know, they're going to have, like, some people going over. But, like, where do you see SmackDown at the end of the day, like, when Roman is not champion? Do you think that's going to be a little bumbled up? Do you think that Raw...
I think SmackDown without Roman as champion will look a lot like SmackDown with Roman Reigns as champion. I mean, he's still going to be the featured player. He's still going to be the star. I think maybe Cody Rhodes makes more appearances on SmackDown as champion, but maybe he stays on Raw just like Roman Reigns as champion has stayed mostly on SmackDown. I think it'll generally look the same. I don't think there's going to be a demonstrable difference. I think WWE and, you know, Roman is the top star, whether he has the title or not. So I don't think it would look all that different.
Well, he might also leave. That's why, like, I feel like, I don't know where it's going to end up if Roman leaves.
Well, that's a different story than him just losing the title. I mean,
right,
that's a whole different
argument. Well, that's what I'm saying.
And I don't...
They're going to do the draft. That's why, like, I hear crazy things. Like, they're going to bring over... you know, this team and then this team or, you know, like, or the Judgment Day. Like, so, you know what I mean? So that's why I was like,
I wouldn't worry about the draft for a while. I don't think, you know, I'm not sure they'll even do one. I think the draft was always something WWE had in their back pocket for the season premiere of Raw and SmackDown. They didn't do it this year. Triple H has not seemed all that interested in having a hard and fast brand split. So I don't know. Maybe once WrestleMania is out of the way, he can kind of sit back and recalibrate and do a draft proper. But I haven't seen anything in his booking that leads me to believe that we're in for a draft anytime soon.
Let me ask you one more thing about SmackDown before I go. Do you think, because Roman loses, do you think Gunther will become the new heel, top heel coming up?
No.
And he'll maybe, like, step
back
a little?
No, it's still going to be Reigns. It's still going to be Reigns. Unless, like you said, unless he leaves for a movie career or something like that, which I don't see, you know. Usually when guys do that, you can kind of see them taking movie roles, and you're like, ugh, this guy's missing more and more time, and that just hasn't happened with Roman. So could it happen at some point? Sure, but I don't get the sense that it's happening anytime soon.
Do you think the fans would want that because he's been so champion for so long? Do you think that they would want to push Gunther as the new head heel for SmackDown?
I think as long as the Bloodline storyline is still going strong, I think fans will accept that.
Mm-hmm. All right. I had that. I guess I'll see you next Sunday.
All right, DJ. Thanks for the call.
Thank you so much.
All right. Got a couple more calls here before we wrap up. The 978 area code is up next. 978, welcome to the show. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, it's Spencer from Massachusetts.
Spencer, good to talk to you tonight. What did you think of the Elimination Chamber?
Coming in, I was like pretty hyped to watch the show. I was kind of surprised they were giving Sammy and like Reigns that early before WrestleMania. That was probably the earliest everybody thought. So I was kind of excited they were actually pulling the trigger and doing it in Montreal. And I guess I kind of came to peace that Sammy wasn't going to win. Like I get that you can't have the dude who was in like a rat trap the year before with the Jackass crew, like beat Reigns' 3-year, you know, title run. Like I get it, even if it's in his own town, like I come to peace with that. But like, I guess what I was just looking for was like, I don't know, like a complete match, you know. I at least wanted to see an awesome match, even if the face like goes down valiantly, you know, because I thought one of the best matches last year was when Riddle fought Reigns on SmackDown, and he hit that awesome RKO for the near fall, and even something in that vein, and I thought there'd be a lot of storyline shenanigans kind of after, but like, I don't know, not during the context of the match. You know, it's like you said before, where there was like two ref bumps, even when like, I don't even think that second ref even threw Jimmy Uso out of the ring. He just let him, like, stay there, like, ringside, I think. Like, there was so much going on. And then when Jay came, there was, like, this whole Shakespearean play going in where he's, like, slowly handing him a chair. And I'm like, where's Adam Pearce? You know, where are the officials? Like, there's no security. Like, this is the middle of the match. And, like, by the time Reigns actually like hit the spear and like the three count, I forgot that the match was still like legally happening. Like it just took so long. And it's just like, I don't know. That's just like not what I wanted out of it. I was hoping if like all that was going to happen where like Jay makes a decision, it was going to happen like afterwards or something. I don't know. It just kind of deflated me. And it just like, I don't know, not what I was looking for.
I agree. I think I would have been a lot more satisfied if, and I think you used the word valiant, if Sami Zayn had put up a valiant fight and it just wasn't enough, right? You know, and I think the crowd being the way it was, and that's the argument I made earlier, like, you didn't need to do all this stuff, all this extra stuff that you would normally need to do to, like, keep the crowd interested and get them in it and keep them invested deep into a show or anything like that. The crowd was going to be there from start to finish no matter what. So why don't you take them on a journey during the match itself and not use all of this nonsense that you didn't really need to use? I didn't really think it added a whole lot. Most of the stuff, you know, the storytelling with Jimmy and Jay and all that stuff, you could have done after the match, and it would have had basically the same effect. And so, yeah, that was the only – I guess, you know, maybe it's nitpicking. Maybe it's just a mild criticism that I have in the grand scheme of things because I thought the show was really good. But I would have looked to have done something a little differently there.
And what's a shame, too, is because by the end of the match wasn't even about Sammy then. It was half about Jay, and then it's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I just kind of wanted Sammy to have his match. I wanted to, even if, like Rocky lost at the end of Rocky, like, it's okay. Like, sometimes it's okay for the face just to lose. And it kind of felt like, I don't know, they were trying to give the hometown crowd everything except the win. Kind of like how they pulled the same thing they did at Clash of the Castle with McIntyre. Like they like to have they let him hit his finisher clean and then they do the pullback shot with the crowd doing, you know, flipping out, but then they just don't give it to you. Except this one just actually had more shenanigans. Like, you know, they had Solo pull his leg out and everybody didn't even know who he was at the end. So it kind of felt like that, but almost worse. Because not everybody really wanted or like wasn't behind McIntyre as much as they were Zayn.
For sure. I think that's an interesting comparison and a good one. Roman has fought a lot of away games, as I think, you know, there's a reference to that on commentary as well. That was one of them, certainly, at Clash of the Castle and another one tonight. So, He overcomes, as he always does. Do you have anything else for us, Spencer? Anything else? Any other thoughts you want to share?
Not much. I thought the Elimination Chamber was pretty good. I don't know if I need the Logan Paul jumping at the end. I'm like, can you just have him, I don't know, talk smack to him on Instagram or something? I'm like, I think that was kind of dumb. I was
that would be
Bronx
more
Logan, like
Logan Paul's that would be more his speed, I think, is the talk trash on social
media.
I'm like,
media. Is he ever going to enter a ring normally, or is he, like, always going to do the flip over the top? Like, he needs one more way to get in there. But I like that Bronson Reed guy. I wish he kind of got some eliminations, but I think he could be a pretty cool monster in the future.
Yep.
But other than that, that's all I have. Thanks for being on.
All right. No problem, Spencer. Thanks for calling in tonight. Really appreciate hearing from you. All right. We've got one more call left to get to. Checking the emails again. Nothing there. So 310 area code. You are on Wrestling Night in America. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
It is Tom. How you doing? Santa Monica area.
Tom, good to hear from you. What did you think of the Elimination Chamber tonight?
You know, like, I think, first off, I think that the most important thing that has to be said is that you cannot create an environment like this without hitting a home run with, 7 to 10 months of just like spectacular booking of this like storyline.
Yep.
So I think it's very important to say that, right? Like the WWE has not even been able to come close to creating an atmosphere like this that I can remember since Daniel Bryan. And I would argue that they weren't even responsible for creating that atmosphere. And so,
right.
You know, I would even argue that the CM Punk situation, they were not responsible for creating that atmosphere, though I would give them a little more credit for that. So to me, this felt like really the first, like, true WWE-created, like, home-run atmosphere success, man, like, since I can remember in memory. And I think I don't want to say it's done because I think they'll figure out a way to continue it. But I do think that moments like this are kind of where it peaks. I did not expect Sami Zayn to win. I think they've booked themselves into a weird corner with this Cody Rhodes thing. I like nothing against Cody. I think he's having great promos and stuff like that. It's just sometimes you're in, you know, the right place at the wrong time. And he feels to be like he's in the right place at the wrong time. The way they booked this ending, there was a silence from the crowd, but I don't think it was the kind of silence you wanted, right? It was like an air taken out of the room type thing. And that's because if you're going to do this, right, like, and to me, the main reason the crowd had not turned on Cody Rhodes yet is that there had not been a conclusion to this Sami Zayn thing. I think the crowd does like Cody and wanted to kind of see where WWE would go with this. But I worry what the WWE here did is tough in this sense. I actually wasn't sure how they were going to attempt to do a Jey Uso turn. I thought it was actually looking quite smart that they were setting it up with the exact same two shoves to the face, Roman turning his back kind of a thing to make it look like Jey was going to do the same exact thing, and then he cracked Sammy in the face. I think if you had it end like that, and then you had, for example, Solo come out, they put the chair over Sammy's face, they're going to take him out, and then Owens comes out, I think you would have had a much more satisfying ending that I think at least would have let the crowd feel like you were leading into something else. I just don't think – it doesn't matter at this point to me if Jey Uso turns on Sami Zayn on SmackDown or whatever. That kind of an atmosphere is a once in a 5 to 10, maybe less, but it's at least a once in a 3 to 5 year kind of a thing. And in WWE credit, they were responsible for creating that atmosphere. But it just, this feels very unfortunate to me. I do feel like having Jey turn on Sammy, like, in that moment would have at least left the WWE open to having an option where it's essentially Owens and Zayn against the Usos on night one, and you at least leave yourself the fallback option of then also putting Zayn into a triple threat in the main event in night two. But The way this ended feels like a relegation of Zayn to the background, and it's just a shame because this, to me, this feels a little Game of Thrones season 8, right? It's like you have just this like spectacular, brilliant, unbelievable buildup, and I do feel, and I'm going to keep an open mind, but this does feel a little bit like they blew it. And to be clear, I am not saying I think Sami Zayn should have won this match. I am just saying that the way he lost it was done very poorly, and that's very unfortunate.
Interesting. Yeah, that was always going to be the big thing, right? Sami Zayn loses. How does he lose? How do you transition him out of this and into whatever he's going to do next, assuming it's Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn against the Usos, without, A, making him seem like a lesser star, or, B, hurting Cody Rhodes because he's going to be your main event of WrestleMania, and you don't want fans feeling empty after this to the point where they reject Cody Rhodes. They say, no, we wanted Sami. And so the transition to presuming Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn versus the Usos has to be such that the fans are still on board. They're still on board with the Sami Zayn journey, even though he lost to Roman Reigns, so that they don't get down on that, so that they don't get down on Cody Rhodes. It really is a delicate, balanced booking. And I think Jey Uso turning, like, I don't even know if that's going to happen. Like, they could keep him on the fence for the next 6 months.
Yeah. At least you would have had the heat on Jey for costing Sami the match. Like, right now, even if Jey turns on Sami in the future and they do some absurd beatdown angle, A, you don't really have the time to keep Sami out for the extended period of time that would require to really, like, reheat this. And B, Jey Uso didn't cost him this match, right? In fact, he, if anything, stopped the inevitable outcome from occurring, and got speared for his trouble out of it. So, like, sure, Sami speared him, and so Jay's going to turn on him at some point. But, like, the fact of the matter is Jey did not cost Sami this match, which is the heat that you needed if you really want to heat up that tag match.
I do wonder how much WWE was cognizant of, all right, we're already having Sami lose. The fans are already going to be upset by that. Do we want to push it by then having Sami turn on him too? And you could still end the show the same way you did, with Kevin Owens coming to his rescue and you know, maybe beating Jey down with a chair and beating Roman down with a chair or whatever like that. But I wonder if they didn't want to do too much to make Sami seem like a loser, or however he may be portrayed, if he was to lose the match and then Jey turned on him along with that.
If they did, I just feel like they outsmarted themselves, because then you just, like, but it made Sami look like more of a loser to have Kevin Owens come out just because Jimmy Uso was on top of him punching him, right? Like, you, to me, you only have Owens come out if Sami is in, like, basically what you want, like, if you want to tell this, like, storyline right, what you want to look at is you say Kevin Owens has every reason to not come out and save Sami Zayn during this match, because Sami Zayn has done nothing but fuck Owens over. The only thing that Sami Zayn did to help Owens is stop him from being literally murdered at the last possible second. And so the only justification for Owens to really come out and help Zayn is if Zayn is in front of his family, about to get literally murdered, right? Like, I just feel like it was a much more logical setup. It would have drawn a heat from the crowd rather than the silence that it kind of brought from that loss. And I just think this feels like very much like Game of Thrones season 8 to me, where it's like you had this build up to this thing and you, like, you know, you beat the White Walkers in like half an episode. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, it just feels like a lot of the, again, I give them an immense amount of credit. People shouldn't be super upset about this if they are, it's a shame because the WWE provided us with better television in the last 7 months than they have in the last 12 years. But, you know, you got to give, you know, this is to me is going to be that moment where I think this is going to have a lot of unfortunate fallout in the sense that I think if people don't actually care about, like, no one's clamoring for this Cody Rhodes Roman Reigns match. And I think people were kind of accepting it again because they were waiting to see what was going to happen with Sammy, because it felt like maybe the WWE, especially with that promo on Monday, it did feel like the WWE would probably figure out a way to work Sammy into this. And I'm not saying they don't now, but I think that this is going to have a lot of ripple effects in the sense that I think they, I mean, God, Triple H had been throwing 100-mile-an-hour fastballs here. Like he'd held off on every match imaginable. He had a perfect setup for Zayn and Owens against the Usos. He had a perfect setup for even a triple threat main event. He has Mysterios. Like, I mean, like this Mania was going to be, and still it will be great, but like it was really set up to be the first Mania in forever that the current roster had been kept apart from each other. And it really felt like we built up feuds for 8 to 9 months. And like, they just kind of confused it here in the last 2 months for no reason. Like Cody Rhodes, it almost feels like Cody Rhodes has like a contractual. And the fact that I'm even saying stuff like this just like lets you know, I just feel like maybe he has a contractual obligation. The fact that I'm even thinking that is just, I think I do not know how you roll Cody Rhodes out in Ottawa on Monday night. You need to be really, 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 really careful rolling him out there on Monday night in Ottawa. And I worry that they set up this perfect Mania, not perfect, but the best Mania in, like, I mean, God, like when's the last time we had a Mania where you didn't have to bring back freaking Goldberg and Brock Lesnar in the main event, and like, you know, Triple H. And like, when's the last time we had a Mania where you just had the current roster? It's still going to be great. They still did a great job, but I really worry they've exposed themselves in a pretty dangerous way here. Especially with Raw in Ottawa on Monday, I would almost like they're caught between a rock and a hard place. If you hold Cody Rhodes off the show, then that's going to look very Vince McMahon-y. And if you put Cody Rhodes on the show, I think it could totally be a disaster. So, I mean, it'll be interesting television, but unfortunately it'll be interesting television in the way it used to be rather than what it has been lately. So, but other than that, I think there were some positives here. I think like Montez Ford, I mean, if people have been waiting for a breakout for that guy, like, if there was a question, and again, I'm thinking of Montez Ford and I'm trying to think of him as the total package. Admittedly, I kind of don't remember any promo he's ever given other than just like yelling, "We want the smoke" with a red cup. But I think he can talk. But that dude is a bona fide star. Like he feels like, he almost feels like Ricochet who can talk. And like is a much more believable star. So like, and people are going to diss Logan Paul, but like as big of a douche as he is, like the fact that he can just do like the buckshot lariat like that is insane. Like that's just an insane athlete. So, you know, again, I worry about how they handled that main event, but I will, hopefully they can recover. But I think this Cody Rhodes thing threw in a curveball to basically a perfect, like they had actually created the Daniel Bryan situation themselves. And I don't know why they threw Cody Rhodes into this. No one was clamoring for a Cody Rhodes title win at WrestleMania. He easily could have won this title at SummerSlam. They would have had more time to build up to it, and I think the fans would have been more accepting of it. I just think Cody Rhodes is going to have to give the promos of his lifetime, and luckily he's certainly much more prepared to give those promos than, like, you know, like Batista coming back from an acting gig. But, like, still, dangerous situation for them.
For sure. Yeah. I think that and Cody is up for it. Look, I think Cody loves the challenge. I think he's a guy who would embrace this challenge of, okay, you know, Sami Zayn has kind of leaped over me in terms of popularity. Let me show you how to get your babyface heat back or something like that. So I think he's smart enough to read the room and understand what's going on. And I think he'll do a nice job. And I think your points are well received. I think the concern was always going to be as Sami Zayn got hotter and hotter and hotter, like, okay, if you're not going to do Sami at WrestleMania, how do you prevent that same level of hijacking that we saw when Daniel Bryan got to the level of Sami Zayn and he was not seen as a main eventer by Vince McMahon? And so I do think, you know, to your point, I think you made the point that Cody is not Batista. You know, Cody is, I think, better positioned to be a babyface who is not, and I could be wrong, who is not rejected by the fan base in lieu of Sami Zayn. And that's just kind of my read on the Rumble and the fallout from the Rumble and the fact that Cody basically endorsed Sami Zayn in one of the promos. You know, he was not trying to Bigfoot Sami Zayn. He was not trying to put Sami Zayn down. He was basically saying, look, I'm preparing to face you at WrestleMania because I think you're going to beat Roman Reigns. So, you know, there's a couple things here at play that's going to keep Cody Rhodes' head above water. The first is Cody himself, how he carries himself, the promos that he cuts. He has some responsibility to that. But as you mentioned, you know, coming out in on Raw, like, how does WWE position him? How does WWE position him vis-a-vis how they position Sami Zayn? What quarter hours do they book him in? What, you know, what segments is he going after or coming before? I think all that's going to be important in Cody Rhodes being accepted by the fans. But also, I think the fans have to know that Sami Zayn is going to do something important. And I think that's why that transition quickly to Zayn and Owens versus the Usos, if that is the direction they're going to, is going to be important. Because you have to, you can't do the thing where, like, okay, Sami faced Roman Reigns, now he's going to be gone for a while and he's not going to do anything important. I think you still have to give fans, you got to throw them that bone that, okay, Sami didn't win, but here's something else important that he's going to do. This relationship with Kevin Owens that's been the storyline for you know, years and years and years, we're going to explore that further. That's going to be play a big part. He's still going to be involved in the Bloodline by feuding with the Usos. So he's not going away from this story that you found so popular. I think that's all going to play a role in, again, hopefully keeping Cody's head above water, because I think there is an interesting story to tell with Cody and Roman. It may not get to the level of heat that Sami Zayn and Roman Reigns got to, but I still think there's something there.
But again, though, right, and I will say, this is not the Vince McMahon era, right? Like, this, people can make mistakes. Mistakes happen. It's unfortunate that I think the mistake happened here, but, like, this mania, they have been setting this mania up for months and months and months and have been doing an unbelievable job and had basically can't miss type matches. And my concern here is just what you just talked about with Cody Rhodes. Like, that is not the kind of stuff we wanted to be dealing with heading into mania. Is like, how can you make, it's not how can we make the fans care if Cody wins. It's, how can we make them not turn on him and want Sami to win, right? Like, that's a Vince McMahon era thing. And it's very strange that we're witnessing it here, because it just felt like they had been smarter recently. And then if you wanted Sami to exit into something important, have Jay crack him in the head with that chair, have the Bloodline basically beat the crap out of him, have Owens come out, save him, but then not shake his hand, do the, you know, Dean Ambrose, Seth Rollins type angle for 3 to 4 weeks where Sami Zayn keeps trying to get him to team up with him and Kevin Owens won't. And then, like, finally they decide to do it together, or they decide to team up through, like, 3 weeks before Mania and you roll into that match. Like, this feels like a convoluted Vince McMahon era situation that they've placed themselves in, when they had basically put themselves in a position to like hit a home run with the bases loaded. And I just don't, it's strange to find themselves here after setting this all up perfectly.
Yeah.
But that's what happens. I mean, and so can they fix it? Let's see.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see how they come out of this on Raw tomorrow night. Anything else for us, Tom, tonight?
No, I think, Montez Ford, again, I'm going to be watching that. I don't expect him to have some, like, major prominent role at Mania, but I do hope, I don't know. I hope they have something there. That was, like, a very important,
yeah.
Like, the crowd loved him. Like, that was a very important thing
yeah.
to see, and I hope that they put a lot of focus on that because I think. Long overdue, and I think that was a breakout tonight. So let's see where they take that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something I'll be watching over the next 3 to 6 months too. I don't think it'll happen overnight. I don't think he's going to come out on
yeah.
Raw tomorrow night and you know be this big single star. But I think it's like I said earlier. I think this is kind of the start. We're going to look back on this match and say that's where he really started to take off as a single star. I think so. Tom, appreciate the phone call tonight. Really good talking
cool.
to you. Yep. All right, folks, that'll do it for me here tonight on Wrestling Night in America. Thank you so much for the calls and emails. Appreciate hearing from everyone after Elimination Chamber. Don't forget, next week, next Sunday, we're going to be going on the air after at 8 p.m. Eastern, our usual time slot, pwtorchdailycast.com. You can send us emails anytime during the week for us to get to during the show, wnialivecast@gmail.com. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter, @GregMParks, and we'll talk to you next Sunday, because if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.